Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines, from blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome to the Behind the Arc podcast. My name is Joel Silverberg. Thank you so much for checking out Behind the Arc, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1, thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Animal app powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. I really appreciate you taking the time to check out the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can subscribe, leave a five-star review, you can leave a question in your review, or you can give a question on Twitter at Joel Silverberg, and I'll get to those questions in the next episode of the Behind the Arc podcast. So Tennessee, more and more updated rankings are coming out for the Vols as different publications and different media analysts are giving their thoughts on Tennessee for the upcoming season. And another top 10 ranking for Tennessee, this one a little bit different from Andy Katz, who does the March Madness 365 podcast and is always, of course, doing a lot of things at NCAA.com, has worked previously in the past with CBS Sports. But Andy Katz, one of the biggest analysts in college basketball, has Tennessee as a top 10 team and actually had Eve Pons and John Fulkerson on his March Madness 365 podcast earlier this week and was asking them about a number of different things. How cool is it to see Grant Williams in his rookie season playing in the conference finals with the Celtics against the Miami Heat, but also what the expectations are for the upcoming season. And Andy Katz asked John and Eve, okay, when you found out that the season was going to start November 25th, practices starting around October 14th, what was your reaction? And Pons immediately responded, let's go get a national championship. So the expectations have not changed for Tennessee, despite maybe the non-conference portion of the schedule being up in the air and not being too certain about if that Wisconsin game, which Tennessee was supposed to open up its season in Madison in a rematch of the Vols and the Badgers from last year, seemed up in the air that games like that were going to happen. And I don't know if the schools are working to get that game kept on the schedule. It was originally scheduled for before November 25th, so obviously that date won't work. But the non-conference portion of the schedule, Rick Barnes told The Athletic earlier last week that without a non-conference schedule, you don't really have the opportunity to build a resume, and teams are going to need to build resumes. But Barnes had said he's confident that he had been confident all along that they were going to have a basketball season, because there's no way the NCAA could afford to let 2 years in a row go by without having the NCAA tournament. But Pons and Fulkerson spoke very highly of the team. They believe they have a lot of depth. They really like the new guys coming in. Keon Johnson, Jaden Springer are the two new five-star guards that are expected to come in and help make an impact right away, along with Santiago Vescovi and Josiah Jordan-James in the backcourt. Then you throw in Victor Bailey Jr., the transfer from Oregon, who shot 40% from three in his last season in Eugene. And you heard me talk on last week's edition of the Behind the Arc podcast with Chris Dortch with the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. He has Tennessee ranked fifth in his preseason top 25 poll. Andy Katz does the Power 36, where he does his rankings, and he has updated it from earlier in the week. Before his most recent rankings, he had Tennessee as the 16th ranked team in the country. He has changed that, and he has Tennessee at number 10. And he says the Vols are loaded with returnees John Fulkerson and Eve Pons and a stud recruiting class led by Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson. This program will push Kentucky for the top spot in the SEC. Now, Katz has Kentucky ranked at number 9. And most of these publications and most of these rankings we've been talking about, Tennessee is the highest ranked SEC school in the preseason polls. What we have here for Kentucky, according to Katz, the Wildcats have the best recruiting class in the country and the potential to add three high-profile transfers pending the waiver process. The Wildcats are picked high based on the projection of what they will look like by March. So Katz is expecting Coach John Calipari to do a lot of development with those freshmen in their first year. And Kentucky's losing a lot. Now they're gaining a lot. And so while that's the sort of team that could potentially win the SEC, you don't normally consider those teams in contention for national championships. It's just so difficult to win a national title with a team full of five-star underclassmen. And it can be done. But as we've seen with some of these Kentucky teams in the past, they can just fall short sometimes when it comes to reaching the Final Four, winning a national title. They'll compete for the SEC, but it really feels like a two-horse race. I think Tennessee is actually the slight favorite because of the amount of upperclassmen and depth that they have, the returning talent that they have. We saw a mediocre Tennessee team at best for most of last season go into Rupp Arena and beat the Wildcats for just the sixth win at Rupp in Tennessee school history. They also got that come-from-behind win over Florida. So for Tennessee, considering the depth they have back this year, the recruiting power that they have being added to that lineup, and then a couple of really good transfers in Bailey and EJ Anasicki, Tennessee, with all that depth, is the favorite going in to the SEC season. And Chris Dortch believes that they're a top five team in college basketball. But Andy Katz having them at number 10, that's not really a surprise. Seeing them as the second highest SEC team, that's a little bit different than some of the other rankings that we've seen throughout the course of the offseason. But that's high praise for Tennessee, and this is the expectation that Tennessee may no longer be a team that has a, you know, develops guys for a couple years, then has a really good chance at a strong season 1 year, and then after that season, it'll graduate some guys, and then it'll take a couple steps back, and we'll have to rebuild and complete the process over again. Tennessee is not in that era of needing to have two or three seasons to rebuild before having a competitive team again. Tennessee is likely looking at its third NCAA tournament berth in four seasons and very potentially being a top three seed within its own region for the third time in 4 years. Tennessee was a three seed 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I should say, was a two seed 2 years ago, and then would probably not have made the tournament this past season. But if Tennessee really fills out that projection as a top 10 team in college basketball, you're easily talking about Tennessee being a three seed in its own region or better for the third time in four seasons and the third consecutive NCAA tournament. And while what happened 3 years ago was a surprise, Tennessee was picked to finish 13th in the SEC and ended up being co-champions in the regular season, Tennessee followed that up by meeting those high expectations the following year, mainly in the regular season. They had the win over Gonzaga, had a really impressive SEC season, dropped the games to LSU and Auburn late in the year, and that was frustrating, but Tennessee still ended up being a two seed in the NCAA tournament, get lost in the Sweet 16. A lot of fans were disappointed. Tennessee was disappointed as well, I guarantee you. And Rick Barnes and his staff are ready to have this team all set to go again for another high expectation season. And when Tennessee was ranked sixth in the nation to start the year a couple years ago, Tennessee didn't drop below sixth in the country throughout the course of the entire season and was ranked number one in the country for 4 weeks and ended up staying within the top six the entire year. So Tennessee has shown that it can handle those expectations and that the program can live up to the hype that the media gives it during the offseason. I don't see any reason to doubt Tennessee's ability to do that here, but I think it's not out of the realm of possibility for the Vols to be a really trendy pick to win the Southeastern Conference. Andy Katz, just to fill out his top 10, he's got Gonzaga number one, Baylor number two, Villanova number three. And again, those are widely agreed upon to be the top three teams in any order, the top three teams in college basketball this year. Gonzaga, despite not having Filip Petrushev, Villanova, with Jay Wright having the opportunity to win his third national championship this season, and then Baylor, man, we got robbed to see what that Baylor team could have been this past season in the NCAA tournament. Some Big Ten teams fill out the top five, Illinois at number four, Iowa at number five. I think that's a little too high for Illinois. I know that when they got Ayo Dosunmu and Kofi Coburn both saying that they wanted to come back, everybody suddenly thought, okay, that's a top 10 team, and it probably is a top 10 team. Putting them at number four, I mean, you're essentially, at that point, you're predicting that Illinois is going to win the Big Ten and be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. I don't know if they're ready to go there quite yet, but this is going to be a really talented team, and Brad Underwood has to be loving the offseason news of having both those guys back. Luka Garza, of course, coming back. He's the preseason favorite to win be a national player of the year. They're going to be expected to do a lot of big things. The Big Ten is going to be a lot of fun. And then Wisconsin is actually at number six in Andy Katz's ranking. Virginia's number seven. Kansas at number eight. They'll probably win the Big 12 again if Baylor doesn't. Kentucky number nine. Tennessee number 10. So you're seeing not the usual suspects from some of these power conference teams. We're not used to seeing Baylor being the highest ranked Big 12 team. We're not used to seeing Illinois being ranked the highest Big 10 team. We're used to seeing Virginia being ranked the highest ACC team. They just won a national championship a couple years ago. But we're not used to seeing Duke outside the top 10. But that's the way that it's going right now. And suddenly the Big 10 looks really good. And it's not because of the Michigan schools. It's because of the schools in Indiana and Illinois and Wisconsin right now. So you've got some really good teams in all the Power 5 conferences. The Big East could take a step back. I don't know what Seton Hall's really going to do without Miles Powell. They're missing some other key players as well. Sandro Mumukalashvili could be really good and could have a breakout senior season. I just don't know how you replace a guy like Powell. Villanova, of course, expected to do big things. And right now, it's just a matter of looking at the rest of that league and saying, okay, which team is actually going to step up consistently? Because Xavier looked good at times and then was inconsistent at other times. And teams like that, that kind of fill in the middle of the pack, which of those teams are going to step up and elevate their play to a more consistent level? Because you had three teams share the conference title a year ago. I don't know if that's happening this season. If it does, I would think it's more because of mediocrity as opposed to parity. But with Creighton getting Marcus Zagorowski back, having Mitch Balick as a really good outside shooter, it gives Creighton a little bit more boost going into this season. I just don't know if they have the depth to be able to compete with all the firepower that Villanova offers. Jay Wright's squad is going to be really, really good. I'll be very surprised if they're not a number one seed in the NCAA tournament this upcoming season. But it's a lot of strong parity towards the top of some of these other Power 5 conferences. Yeah, I think it's great for the Big 12. They have somebody besides Kansas that looks like a legitimate Final Four contender. The Big 10 has just so much depth. Last year, there was talk earlier on in the season that they could get 12 teams into the NCAA tournament. I don't think that happens this year, but when you consider Illinois and Iowa are suddenly being talked about in the elite category, Wisconsin's probably going to be a top 10 team. Rutgers is probably going to break the longest Power 5 NCAA tournament drought in the country that's active right now. I think you just have to tip your cap to what the Big Ten is doing and acknowledge that there's a lot going on in that conference, because Michigan and Michigan State are still going to be good. It's not like those teams are going anywhere. Ohio State, Penn State, those two teams had solid seasons a year ago. Probably both would have been in the NCAA tournament. For Penn State, it would have been the first time in nearly a decade if the tournament hadn't gotten canceled. So for Tennessee, I think it's sitting pretty in a nice position right now. Sure, it's not being considered a Final Four contender. Chris Dorsch said last week that he believes they're definitely a Final Four contender, but it's not being talked about in the same category as Baylor, Villanova, and Gonzaga. It's not getting the type of hype that Illinois is getting in terms of having returnees. Obviously, Epon's coming back is huge, but it's not getting the same amount of buzz as Ayo Dosunmu and Kofi Coburn both going back to Illinois. So Tennessee has a lot of things going for it, but it's not being talked about in the same way. And looking at the transfer rankings for players that sat out this past season and are eligible this year, Victor Bailey Jr. might be seriously underrated. Josiah Jordan James earlier in the offseason called him the best kept secret in college basketball. He might be right. You're talking about a guy that shot 40% at a Power 5 school from 3-point range just two seasons ago. And so Victor Bailey Jr. is going to be able to come in. He's not going to be asked to do a whole lot with all the depth Tennessee has in that backcourt. So looking at where Bailey Jr. is being ranked, I mean, I saw him being ranked outside the top 25 of all transfers, just individual players. And obviously there's going to be some high profile guys that are going to be more anticipated. Andrew Nembhard, a guy like that going from Florida to Gonzaga, playing on a more high profile team. Yeah, okay, I understand that. But guys like Carly Jones that's transferring and going elsewhere and players like that. It's just interesting to see, okay, so is Victor Bailey Jr. being overhyped in the Southeast, or is he being seriously overlooked by the rest of the country? And I think we're going to find out one way or the other here as the season gets going in about 2 months. So looking at the rest of Andy Katz's top, his Power 36 rankings, as I mentioned, Kentucky number 9, Tennessee number 10. And so those are the top two teams in the SEC, both cracking the top 10. You go farther down, you go a little while before you get to another SEC school. It's Alabama at number 28. It's Florida at number 29 and LSU at number 35. And that's it for the SEC. So again, that conference depth, maybe the SEC is being a little overlooked. Arkansas not having Isaiah Joe, I think, gives the Razorbacks a serious hit. And it sounds like he's not buying in to all the hype that Ole Miss has received, because the Rebels have been ranked in a couple of top 25 preseason polls early on in the season with what Kermit Davis could do with that team, with all the transfers he has coming in a pretty good recruiting class. So the Rebels have been a trendy pick to be a top 25 team. Andy Katz isn't buying them right now. And to a degree, I'm really not either. I've got them in my top five in the SEC power rankings right now, but that's only as a result of moving them up from number six because of Arkansas falling out of the top five with Isaiah Joe not being there. And with the transfers they have and the recruiting talent that they have, I think Eric Musselman's team is going to be one that you can't afford to sleep on. I just don't know if they're going to be able to handle it consistently, because they looked like a good team last year with Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe, but they fell apart without Joe in the lineup when he got injured. And so they've got to be able to prove to me that they can handle that consistently with him not being there. Florida, I'm just not buying at all. I'm selling stock in Florida because they were a top six preseason team going into the season, ended up falling well short of expectations, looked terrible at times, especially against big-time opponents, blew that second half lead to Tennessee. Obviously, credit to the Vols for being able to come back. John Fulkerson hitting the three-pointer is going to be one of the best shots in recent history for Tennessee fans, especially just because of the guy who shot it. But I think for Florida, now you're losing Kerry Blackshear, you're losing Andrew Nembhard, and you expect me to believe that you can be a top five SEC team without those guys when you were really mediocre with those guys the previous year? I don't see it in Mike White. And I think that Florida fans, I think they're fed up with him. Obviously, he inherited a lot of talent from Billy Donovan, took that team to the Elite Eight. Since then, just not really seeing Florida having a ton of success. They could be a tournament team because it is Florida. They do have some talent. But are Florida fans really going to be all that impressed if this Gators team ends up being a 9 seed, squeaks into the second round, and then gets blown out by a number 1 seed? I mean, that's just too, for a program like Florida that's not that far removed from having Billy Donovan as its head coach, I think Florida fans are going to be fed up. And it wouldn't surprise me to see that seat heating up for Mike White as the season goes on. So Tennessee being mentioned as a top 10 team and talking about big-time matchups within the non-conference schedule. Well, Tennessee was originally scheduled to be a part of two non-conference multi-team events at the course of this season. And ESPN, Jeff Borzello, reported earlier this week that ESPN is planning to move at least 8 of its men's college basketball events to the ESPN Wide World of Sports property at Walt Disney World in Orlando. That's, of course, where the NBA bubble has been. It's gone very well. It's been successful. We're in the conference finals right now. We're going to have the NBA finals here pretty soon. Tennessee is impacted in two of those events. The Charleston Classic, which includes Charleston, Florida State, Houston, Oklahoma State, Penn State, Seton Hall, and VCU, along with the Volunteers. And then Tennessee was also supposed to take part in the Jimmy V Classic with against Gonzaga, and Baylor and Rutgers would also be there. That's an awesome lineup, by the way, for the Jimmy V Classic. So if those events are moved to Orlando and they can facilitate a bubble and have multiple events there at one time, which according to Borzello, that is a possibility, Tennessee could also schedule perhaps some other non-conference games while being down there. And that's already been thrown out there with Gonzaga and Baylor. If you remember, over the summer, those two teams scheduled a big, you know, 1-2 or 2-3, depending on where they end up in the preseason polls. But you're talking about two of the top three teams in the country playing a non-conference game against each other. That would obviously get a lot of eyeballs. Well, if non-conference games can't be played at campuses, how do they go about doing that? Well, if Gonzaga's already down there for the Jimmy V Classic and Baylor's down there to play Rutgers in the same event, then they could potentially find a way to facilitate a non-conference game, a standalone game that's not a part of the Jimmy V Classic. And both those schools are expected to take part in that event. Of course, Tennessee to play Gonzaga, Baylor to play against Rutgers. And I think that would be great for college basketball to give those schools the opportunity to be able to have these non-conference games. And those are two preseason national championship contenders who agreed back in August that they wanted to play each other in a non-conference game. So they're not scheduled to play each other in the Jimmy V Classic, but they're both scheduled to be there. So could they facilitate another game? Possibly. You look at the other teams that are supposed to be in all of these events, and you're talking the Champions Classic, the Charleston Classic, the Myrtle Beach Invitational, the NIT Season Tip-Off, the Wooden Legacy, the Orlando Invitational, the Jimmy V Classic, and the Diamond Head Classic. You've got so many big-time programs that cover all these. Of course, the Champions Classic, Duke, Michigan State, Kansas, Kentucky. Also in the Myrtle Beach Invitational, you've got some Power 5 teams like Nebraska and Missouri, which is an opportunity to get some smaller schools. You know, Pitt's going to be there, and they're going up against Furman, Charlotte, Dayton, Loyola, Chicago. I don't know what Dayton's going to be this season without Obi Toppin. The NIT Season Tip-Off, Arizona, Cincinnati, St. John's, Texas Tech, the Wooden Legacy, Georgetown, Kansas, UCLA, Virginia. So you've got a couple of top 15 preseason teams with Kansas and Virginia. So you just have all these great programs that could be heading down to Orlando, and multiple events could be held at the same time. And this is how the top teams in college basketball can build their resumes. There's also been discussion of schools hosting their own non-conference bubbles, where if a team decides, hey, we're going to flip the bill for all these smaller schools to come, we're going to get 8 schools in, everybody's going to play 3 games or so over the course of a week, and that way we can get some non-conference games in. But the NCAA has been more and more open to the idea of using a bubble system for non-conference play and for conference play. I don't know what the format will be when we eventually get to conference play, but as we saw with the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, when we talked about it last week, they've already laid out their scheduling model. It's just a matter of time before we see the Power 5 schedule starting to follow suit and detailing how they want to go about the upcoming basketball season. I appreciate you joining me on the Behind the Arc podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Again, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Animal app powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. Thank you for taking the time to listen. We're getting closer to the college basketball season. We're about 2 months away from tip-off, and Tennessee expected to be a top 10 team, potentially a Final Four contender. It's going to be a lot of fun getting ready for this season, especially watching this team compete. Rick Barnes told The Athletic earlier this week that he's revitalized and believes that his team is ready to go, that they're going to be deep, they're going to be competitive. There's going to be some new faces out there, but having Eve Pons, Josiah Jordan-James, John Fulkerson, having all those guys back, I think Tennessee fans are going to be very excited for this upcoming season. Again, on Apple Podcasts, hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating and review, and be sure to reach out to me at Joel Silverberg on Twitter for any questions about the Behind the Arc podcast. Thanks for listening to the Behind the Arc podcast on the Esports Animal.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on the Sports Animal.